And will oil prices surge to $380 per barrel like JP Morgan says? And if they do, what could the outlook be for out of home? And a new Monmouth poll adds a bit of spice to today's thesis. How can micromobility and the gig economy, how could that lead the way for real world brands through the recession? That and more on today's Out of Home Insider Daily. Wow, what a start to getting this thing launched. What a weekend. It's good to be back. Sending my appreciation to each of you today. The podcast broke an all-time record on Friday. 224 global downloads in one day. It wasn't that long ago that we didn't get 224 downloads in a month. So please continue to subscribe wherever you're listening. Leave a five-star review. Share an episode with a colleague or client. All of those things help, and this is just a bootstrapped operation. For me, it's just me, my microphone, and my one-ear headphone. This side, the left side, doesn't work. So your support is the way that I get the most value from this, and thank you for all of that. All right, diving into today's story, something you may have heard about already in the news because it's a couple of days old, but I want to really think through the thesis here because I think that there's something to it, and I'm hoping that you do too. First, for the piece, this coverage out of international business publication ZBiz.com. Will oil prices surge to $380 a barrel or slump to $45? What do JP Morgan and Citi reports say? Amid fears of inflation and rate tightening by global central banks, crude prices have been exhibiting extreme volatility. Oil plummeted about 9% on Tuesday, that's last week, in the biggest daily drop since March, while the prices jumped as much as nearly 3% on Wednesday. Fears of global markets slipping in recession are also weighing on oil. Meanwhile, global brokerage firms have come up with extreme opposite reports on the crude prices. JP Morgan sees crude prices jumping to a record $380 per barrel, while Citi says the prices can even come down to $45 a barrel. As per JP Morgan, oil prices could surge to $380 a barrel if Russia decides to slash crude production in response to Western plans to cap the country's energy prices. We're going to need a sip of tea. Retaliating against the G7 price restrictions, Moscow could slash its oil production by as much as 5 million barrels per day without causing excessive damage to its economy, says JP Morgan. The most extreme scenario of a 5 million barrel per day slash in production could drive oil prices to a stratospheric $380 a barrel, JP Morgan's analyst, led by Natasha Kaneva, said in a note. It is of the view that Russia is in a commanding position despite sanctions by the West, thanks to the recent hikes in oil and gas prices. However, such action by Russia could turn disastrous for global oil markets. Citi on oil prices, on the other hand, Citi believes that crude oil could slump to $45 a barrel by 2023 end and touch $65 by the end of the year 2022 in the case of recession. Citi's scenario based on the fact that if Russia denies oil to the U.S. and European countries and continues to supply Asian nations, that the crude prices could drastically come down to said levels. If global economic growth slows toward recessionary levels, prices could plunge to $65 a barrel by the end of 2022 and keep falling to $45 a year after that, Citi said. There's a 10% probability of this outcome. This is the double-edged sword. If crude oil prices go down, it's because demand is going down, which means the economy is likely in a tailspin at that point. On the other hand, going to the moon means that global tensions with Russia have tightened to a point that they've cut oil production to Western countries. For now, the best case scenario is that prices stay where they are for the time being, but long-term impact of sustained record high gas prices is a relative unknown. With that, it can be expected that consumer behavior will begin to adapt as we saw in 2020 during COVID lockdowns, the sudden mass adoption of gig-powered delivery apps that were the extension to the outside world, everything from booze to groceries, prescriptions, the takeout. It could be a hint of where to look at for the next big evolution for born online brands breaking into the real world. A year ago, the Monmouth poll of top concerns amongst Americans found that the top concerns were the pandemic, economy, everyday bills, healthcare costs, and job security, making up for about 50% of the country being top concerns. That same poll today found that nearly half of the country is concerned about inflation or gas prices. Just those two top concerns outweigh those five concerns from a year ago. The concern about the economy and gas worries more Americans than the pandemic, the economy, everyday bills, healthcare costs, and job security did just 12 months ago. And eventually, that's all got to come out in the wash. So then, how does all of this roll up to out-of-home, micromobility, the gig economy? How can we position out-of-home as a top choice in an economy that forces families to consider how they get the things they need and get to the places they need to go in the most economical way? And the beauty of micromobility and the gig economy is that economies of scale unlock network effects and create a ton of value for consumers, whether that be a city startup employee base that is now working from home in the suburbs and has a great community bike share program you've never heard of, like B-Wagon that hosts a bike share program. Think City Bike, but in the burbs in places like Park City, Utah, which is home to Park City Mountain, the largest resort in the United States. And it's just about a half hour from Salt Lake City, or a company like Swift Mile, which are public access charging docks for EV bikes and scooters a la Volta, but for our two-wheeled friends and in major downtown areas. These can be great for picking up a lot of foot traffic and folks driving by too. So whether as a novel touristy thing to do or just a practical way to get around during the summer with record high gas prices, micromobility has an opportunity to shine in practicality as transportation, but also as an ad format, particularly for brands that want to connect on a deeper contextual message of conservatorship and being a social steward. So if micromobility is going to be winning micro moments, influencing that digital reflex where we want to grab our phones to know something, go somewhere, do something, or buy something, then how about last mile delivery and rideshare? Well, now more than ever, I am hearing hesitancy from some brands on truck side when the idea of gas guzzling doesn't really match the brand, which I totally get. Yet for companies that move products and deliver physical goods, I really still don't think there are many better options dollar for dollar, pound for pound. We talked about AB5 and potentially as many as 70,000 fewer trucks being on the road in California as early as this month. We know that fleets around the country have been crushed by record driver shortages, and supply chain challenges mean that fewer deliveries are being made. Fewer deliveries mean fewer miles, and fewer miles mean fewer impressions. So even for brands with wrapped delivery fleets, their trucks are contributing less to the marketing mix just because they're on the road less. So truck side, particularly in the last mile delivery category, under the thesis of more families making fewer trips and staying closer to home, is an absolute winner and could be the new static large format in the right market for the right type of company. Obviously, if we're talking rideshare, then that's everything from digital taxi toppers to rideshare TV inside, and all of the great options for wrapping cars. Brands have been responding very favorably to the idea that the drivers are being compensated for being a part of the campaign. So emphasize what good marketing is. Good marketing isn't just marketing that works. It's marketing that does good too. So talk more about good marketing. I think transit's certainly interesting because gas prices can certainly be a good motivator for folks who don't normally take public transportation to start taking public transportation. And pedicabs, don't sleep on pedicabs. Particularly interesting is the new food delivery fleet that's rolling out in New York City. Something like 60,000 deliveries a week that will be made via essentially a peditrike that can be wrapped across the entire city by the end of the year. So hashtag hyperlocal. TikTok ads would be way cooler if they had pedicab food delivery bikes cruising in it, walking on sunshine, Casey and the Sunshine Band, something like that. High reach, high recall opportunities, I think, make a ton of sense. So aerial banners over crowded beaches are obvious, but least obvious when used by the least expected brand. So if this feels outside of your comfort zone, maybe try it on. See how it feels. Ask a few friends. Go ahead. Treat yourself. If you got the budget, YOLO. Do a blimp. But while not micromobility or gig-powered, it makes sense to try and reach a lot of people at the same time when our daily journeys are likely to morph uniquely again for a second time in as many years. And for a bit of inspiration, a pretty cool lesson in marketing, grab this piece from neurosciencemarketing.com. Edward Noble is best remembered today for his 1943 founding of the American Broadcasting Company, which survives today as part of Disney. Decades before that, though, he was a pioneer in the candy industry. In 1913, Noble bought the rights to Peppermint candies, mints shaped like donuts and packed in a cardboard tube. Because they resembled the nautical safety device, the candies became known and were soon trademarked as, you guessed it, Lifesavers. One quick change Noble made was to the packaging. He replaced the cardboard tube with a foil wrapper. This kept the mints fresher and was more convenient for his customers. His real innovation, though, was in how he changed the shopping experience. We think of a focus on friction as being a recent innovation led by digital firms trying to ramp their growth at warp speed. Jeff Bezos talked about frictionless shopping back in 1997. Today, founders throw out terms like frictionless onboarding, frictionless banking, and so on. A century earlier, Noble didn't use that term but had similar insight. According to my friend and business historian Gary Hoover, Noble combined two strategies, both focused on making his mints easy to buy. First, he placed full racks of them next to the cash registers at cigar stores and restaurants across the U.S. Noble's second tactic was even more insightful. He priced the mints at 5 cents a roll and encouraged cashiers to always include a nickel when they were giving change back to the customer. The ease of grabbing a roll and handing a single coin back to the cashier created explosive sales growth. Get this. According to Hoover, sales rose from 900,000 rolls in 1914, pretty good, to 68 million rolls by 1920. That's over a billion mints per year and a compounded annual growth of more than 100% for 6 years. As mints, early Lifesavers were unremarkable except for a memorable brand based on their proprietary hole in the center. Other mints no doubt tasted the same. The key to the explosive growth of Lifesavers was convenience. Customers could make the purchase without thinking. Noble was smart enough to place the displays not in candy stores, but in the exact places where people might want a mint when paying at a tobacco store, saloon, or restaurant. And the nickel change practice ensured near zero thought and effort to make the sale. To put it in terms proposed by behavioral economist Daniel Kahneman, the purchase decision could be made intuitively by System 1 without needing to involve more effortful System 2. It seems likely to me that for many customers, this could become a habit. Buy a few cigars or a pack of cigarettes, and without thinking, pick up a pack of Lifesavers for after smoking. There's a ton of irony in that. If your product or service isn't all that different than what your competitors offer, try a friction reduction strategy to build your advantage. If customers find it easier to buy from you, you will outsell your competitors. This approach worked a century ago for Edward Noble. It's working today for Amazon, Uber, and many other firms that focus on a frictionless customer experience. That doesn't mean that you need to automate your process or remove people from it. It doesn't mean that you need to give things away or make it less expensive. Making things easier means just that. It means making things easier. It could mean just educating your customers to make the decision easier for them so that they can make that decision faster and more confidently and more regularly. It could just mean, something as simple as a Slack integration. Some of the partners that we work with most frequently are just that. They're the ones that are easiest to communicate and solve best for the customer. So what ways can you make it easier? It doesn't necessarily mean automating it or removing people from the process. That's it. That's today's Daily Tear Sheet. We tried a lot of new things today. Thanks for sticking along. We got a great audience over on Instagram Live. And if you stuck around on the LinkedIn Live, we certainly appreciate you there. And for now, I'm going to press stop on the main side, and we'll see you tomorrow.